Hey everyone, welcome or welcome back to the Gary V Audio Experience. We have an awesome episode for you today, but we just want to remind you before the episode starts that if you're listening to this episode on Spotify, please leave your comments for today's episode, suggestions, or anything in between in the Q&A section under this episode. If you're listening on Apple, Google, or anywhere in between, please tweet Gary at Gary V. Make sure you join the Discord to stay up to date on all things V Friends. And we hope you enjoy this episode.
This is the Gary V Audio Experience.
One question, an amazing lineup of CEOs, founders, and experts. This is Marketing for the Now.
Can you hear me?
Your 50th.
Thank you so much.
That made me feel.
Thanks for having me.
I love how both of you, Eliza,
for
your back.
So glad to
be here. You really see the
word. Marketing for not you.
Gary.
It's great to see you, Andrew.
I can't believe it's been another month. Woo. And we're going to talk about TV 3.0. Let's fire it up.
Yes, I'm excited about this topic. And before we get our guests, let's say hi to Bobby Ann. Let's say hi to Stephanie B on Facebook, Solar Surfer Z on YouTube. Let me see if I can get a LinkedIn here one. Let's see, are we streaming on LinkedIn? I'm trying to see a LinkedIn comment.
Oh, it should be.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I don't see one yet, but usually they pound it. But nonetheless, thank you, everybody. Jerome, great to see you. Thank everybody for joining. Go ahead, Andrea.
We're going to mix it up and we're going to bring on one of our experts in all things TV 3.0. It's our Hugh Scallon. He's VP, head of video activation. And Gary, it's funny. I've been working with Hugh for so long, but I hadn't really looked at his bio. Oh my God, he's done so many things. And he just got back from Advertising Week where he got a bunch of different insights and things. So, and he happens to be one of my dearest friends because we both were like hanging out here a little bit. So that might pop up, but I'll let you guys jump in.
All right.
Real pleasure. Yes. Usually we go from the outside and we will do that. But obviously Hugh, you've been on this journey with us here at Vayner on this TV 3.0 thing. And I thought we could set the tone for a lot of the listeners here on the platforms. How do you define TV 3.0 from a TV advertising standpoint, since that's a big expertise of yours?
Yeah, Gary, thank you. And we talked about this last week, sort of brought this out at Advertising Week from Stealth Mode. TV 3.0, what is it? It's the TV that we know and love. It's the TV that's becoming more digital with every day. And for a lot of people, it's social media, because for a lot of people in different platforms, that's their form of television. If you watch a tremendous amount of TikTok or YouTube, go down the list. It's really the fusion of where we are and what's next and where it's going.
Hugh, for a lot of people that are watching here, and I'm looking at the names, Sarah, great to see you, Chris Z, Adam M on Facebook. This TV 3.0, the Rokus, the Hulus, you actually rattle off 15 names of platforms, Plutos, like I just want to set everybody because I have a big call coming. Keep going.
Yeah. I mean, some of the way that I break it down and try to put this in a slide, it's like your own Lumiscape, right? You have the brand name streamers, HBO Max, Netflix, Disney Plus now has ads. You go to Hulu, you go to Pluto, you go to Tubi, you have your FAST channels, your AVOD channels, Crunchyroll, Crackle. You have the whole smart TV industrial complex, right? LG, Samsung, Vizio, you have Amazon. We have all the local TV stations in America are racing to build their own video product. The old CBS All Access, you can get CBS channels on your Apple Plus. There are devices. You have your dongles and sticks, your Apple Plus, your Fire Sticks. It's really a diaspora. And it sort of takes a Lumiscape to pull it together. But that's a hard way to do a plan. So you have to have kind of a decoder ring to break this all down.
In that decoder ring and the opportunity and back to its social, let me ask a question that I think is gonna inspire a lot of SMBs and creators on this call. And then we'll get into Fortune 500 land because their whole world, our clients, Hugh's whole world is upside down now because it's always been EV commercials, which don't exist in the value exchange anymore, given this connected TV and streaming OTT. Is it true that now, because of this whole new universe, that normal people, local businesses,
yeah,
one, a single creator, a solopreneur, my dad's wine shop, one yeah. store unit in New Jersey, yeah. are now going to be able to run TV commercials in this new environment because it's more biddable and it's more you put in the content and technology. Like, is that true?
1,000%. I think it's one of the most interesting.
For how low of monies can someone here see a commercial they make for themselves or their business
yeah.
show up in between a show on TV3?
Hulu has Hulu Ad Manager. If you download it on your phone and you get approved as an SMB, as little as $500 minimum campaign, you can be on TV.
Right. So Hardy D just said, okay, totally lost later. Hardy, the reason for entrepreneurs and individuals listening here is for $500, you can have a commercial for yourself, your profile, your startup, your local business, in between, like a real show on Hulu.
Yeah.
That's unheard of. It was yeah. millions of dollars. This is a big fucking deal.
What do we have? Like 1,000 to 3,000 is the number total brands on television, as we know, TV nationally. And what do we have? Like 1 million businesses on Google and Facebook. Somewhere in between there, we could have tens of thousands.
I apologize.
Of advertisers on streaming TV.
I apologize to you. Danny Ram asked me, can I beatbox? So let me just do this real quick. Sorry, just needed to do that. I mean, human really, what does this mean for the big guys? We got 3 more minutes. What would this mean for the big guys? You know, cool for the entrepreneurs, 500 bucks, yeah. holy crap. But what does it mean for the big guys?
Yeah, for the big guys, look, and we see this every day, there's really a dichotomy. There's two things. On one hand, if you're big on linear television, you've got to think about linear TV reach extension. So it's effectively a math problem. How do you replace the eyeballs that are dropping as linear ratings fall? And how do you get them back in streaming in a world of constrained supply, A? And then B, and what's fascinating, kind of where you were going earlier, for marketers that have been heavily in digital and believe in outcomes and building brand and social, you can now bring your digital campaign, a big marketer, maybe a big marketer in portfolio has a small budget, that brand that was only in social, only in search, only in YouTube, they can now complement. They can be on television coast to coast like VFriends.
That's right. I mean, somebody just gave the practice.
I got to set you up.
You know where I'm at on all this. Yeah. Final thoughts on 2 minutes. Like, how scared are people with this technology shift, and who are the potential winners and who are the potential losers if they don't act?
I would say it's less about scared, but about confused. Right. I mean, it's very complex. It's hard to figure out. It takes a coalition of partners. You may need an extra third party research partner. You may need to hire more influencers. You may need to produce more creative. How do I keep the frequency down? Right. So it's kind of a confusing time, not unlike 10 years ago in the rise of social. I think the losers would be the people who don't act. If you step back and just keep your same plan, 2 spots a year, the consumers are moving faster than the brands. The media companies are moving faster than the brands. They're creating these streaming profiles, I mean, platforms globally. So you've got to lean in and you've got to go back. And so I think the winners are the people that do test and learn. There's no reason, like you were showing your product earlier, you couldn't partner up, if you're a CPG, partner up with Walmart Connect and Roku and test the sell-through of shoppable TV commerce, just something we talked about at Advertising Week. There's never been more opportunities to test TV because of the fact that it's got more of an IP basis now.
Hugh, thank you so much. Can say 2 things. What this shows about these little 10-minute hits is, and I see all the comments, go Google, how do I run $500 ads on Hulu? Enter. What Hugh and I are doing is creating the awareness, the high level strategic opportunity for a lot of people. It's literally Google. Go follow it up right now. You can really get in the game. And then yes, for the dozens I've seen so far, we're always hiring in VaynerX. So please go to VaynerX.com and find those jobs across the board. Hugh, thank you, brother. Keep up the good work.
Thanks, Gary.
Thanks, Hugh. Gary, I can't believe that we have Ben Silverman coming up. My family is called...
Hollywood
My legend. Family is addicted to The Office. I was telling Ben that we went off on a family vacation to the beach and the family, all my kids wanted to just watch The Office, The Office, The Office. He's the entrepreneur and visionary behind that and so much more. Welcome, Ben.
Thank you so much for having me, guys. And I was impressed with you. He's got, I mean, God, you guys got some smart gray hairs in the building. I thought it was all like.
We've aged up since you and I did Planet of the Apps, my friend. We're grown up over here now.
Come on, man. That was an impressive hire over there. I like to see you.
But listen, you are a real, you know, a real man of the industry on the creative side. Why don't you actually give people, because I think people will get a real kick out of it. Give people a one minute, you're a humble dude, but let's give you a minute to do some hype on your career and things you're involved in, and then I'll get into my stuff, please.
You know, serially looking for the best ideas wherever they were or are. You know, when I lived in London, I found Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, Big Brother, Survivor, brought all those to the United States and kind of It's My Fault could be the title of my biography about reality television. And then migrated into creating our own content here in the US and adapting others, created The Biggest Loser, created a show called The Tudors, a historical epic, which I loved. Produced and packaged up The Office, you know, found Steve Carell to be the lead, Greg Daniels to be the head writer, show running partner, creative genius behind it. Always believed in Latin content and Latinx content as a way to kind of connect the Americas. So Ugly Betty, Jane the Virgin, two other seminal pieces of work in my own, you know, resume. And then right now doing tons of amazing content for multiple outlets, wife calling, always good to say sorry. And everything from Chopped, which is on the Food Network, number one food show in the world. Hopefully all of you are watching Chopped and Chopped Junior with your families, and producing and shooting Shaka Zulu right now in Africa with Antoine Fuqua, which I'm really excited about for Showtime and Paramount Plus. And just continually making, you know, premium high-end content for all platforms, 1 minute or less. And I was the chairman of NBC and Universal Media. And I had the great privilege of putting Gary Vee as we were the first wave and salvo into Apple's content wars. And really? It's not always good to be first, and it's not always good to be early.
I wish you were second on that. I'd be much more aware.
I know. I'm so annoyed. It's so annoying.
Brother, what are the production companies, the creatives who are trying to fill all these pipes, the Hulus, the Peacocks, the, you know, HBO Max, like how is the land, you know, educate people here a little bit under the hood of Hollywood. TV 3.0, we'll talk a lot about from the marketing and ad side, but on the creative side, is this a windfall because there's so many more buyers? Get a little nerdy with us. Netflix had so much leverage that they killed the back end for a while because they had the leverage. Go a little 201, 301. There's a lot of smart people here. What changed for the people inventing the shows and making the shows with this explosion of these over-the-top services and new CTV environments? What's different than when you were making decisions at NBC and there was three or four or five players to this vaster evolution, or even the incumbents having to play in the streaming over their cable stuff? Like, what's the lay of the land? What's everyone buzzing about in Hollywood?
It's like part offensive, part defensive, right? You know, it's these companies coming together to launch new offerings, take advantage of what technology has enabled, which is a direct-to-consumer relationship and dynamic, and a way in which they can feed their content over the internet directly into your home, has opened up all these new opportunities, all of which are being embraced by the studio network oligopoly that has run Hollywood content as we know it over the last 50 years. Unfortunately or fortunately, they also need to hold on to their old businesses where serious amounts of money were being generated, where those are, as a cable network, your relationship to an MSO or cable provider like Charter or Comcast or DirecTV, who's paying you per subscriber for every single person watching their platform, whether that's A&E, History, Discovery, et cetera. And those were major, major cash flow machines. But now, as you go into streaming and the direct to consumer, you're creating a little bit of a fight with your MSO, with your cable provider, with your satellite company. So that's like one example. Another great example, you know, of this kind of offensive defense. Yep. Another one is, hey, we're HBO Max. We own Warner Brothers, arguably the greatest movie studio in the history of movie studios. We make big budget, amazing movies. We make Oscar winning movies. You know what we're going to do? We're going to debut them all on TV. And that got Jason Sklar, Killer, killed, you know, and shot in the back of his head as he messed with Hollywood showbiz.
Virtually, by the way, everyone.
Yeah, you know, like in a showbiz sense, you know, because he messed with the A-list, and the A-list fights back, as we've seen in the Oscars and other places. And so within that context, you know, he cut off his nose despite his face because he gave up all of this lucrative cash on cash, you know, revenue that comes through his exhibitors in the case of the movie.
And Ben, that might be an example similar to our show being the first thing on Apple Music, not on Apple TV. One can argue that in 12, 15 years, we'll look back and say, ah, he was a hair early, because now the scale is there digitally.
I liked what you said about, you know, test and learn. Unfortunately, we were tested and we learned, but we didn't get the trillion dollar benefit that we all believed in and was frankly would have manifested had we been able to play that out.
Distribution for sure. And it's similar for him, right? Like today there's still too much money to give up in theater, but as things evolve, and who the heck knows what the world looks like in 12 years with VR and this, that, and the other thing. I think people look back and be like, ah, he was a decade early. That business move might have worked better in today's environment, as we see often.
And it happens all the time. Like when I started looking at different genres of content, like I'll just talk about one genre, and I gotta assume you're watching my Untold documentaries on Netflix.
They're monsters.
They're monsters, right? So the girl, you know, the girlfriend who didn't exist, the Matt Taibbi doc, which is massive.
I only consume docs for the most part. And so like the second Teo, you know, all that stuff, because you know I'm a sports head, like all that stuff is phenomenal.
And so in that context, right, here's some information that's public. And this is just an example.
Oh, I apologize, Ben, real quick. Megaloot asks, is this real live or a rerun? Megaloot, I'm proving that this is live. Go ahead, Ben.
Live. It's 2021. No, it's live in 22. So one of the things about documentaries, always loved documentaries, but they were homework. They lived on public broadcasting, and there were things that would be shown in your classroom. They weren't really, you know, for a wide audience, and they certainly weren't about making money, right? There were elements in documentaries where you would literally you would make three documentaries over your career, and you were considered like a high output, high generating documentarian. And most of the money you raised came from your dentist and your uncle, the stockbroker, and you had a rich cousin. And that's how you raised the money to make your little docs. Boom. Arrival of Netflix, arrival of Apple, you know, the maturation of Sundance and these film festivals. And suddenly documentaries are becoming a compelling part of the content menu. And if you look at it really in statistical level, right, Netflix arrives on the scene, let's say they have 40 million subscribers, around 10% of those subscribers, 4 million people, are watching a documentary when they hired their head of documentaries. Now there's over 230 million people watching Netflix or whatever the exact number is, and 80% of them are watching a documentary. So it's not just about how we communicate or where we communicate or where the audience is seeing the content, but it's also this opportunity to expand the genres of content that are being produced and focused on. And for the price of 10 documentaries is still 10% the price of The Gray Man or one giant, you know, movie, action adventure movie, yet they can deliver as much cultural currency and conversation as any movie. So I mean, long-winded way to say it's like this genre mix is suddenly exploding, and there are great opportunities for creatives like me and people who love to tell stories. And then within the experimentation on the streamers and the platforms, they're able to buy into more of a menu of ideas, and they're not just limited to sitcom, drama, and game show.
Very simple yes, no answer in the last 30 seconds we have, because we could do a whole hour with you. Do you think there will be consolidation of the streaming services in the next decade?
It's all about the government. It's already a very small group of companies. It is a real oligopoly, and they're now the biggest companies in the world, Amazon, Apple, Comcast, etc. I don't know how they allow much more consolidation. And for me as an independent, I would heavily lobby against it.
Of course. Because
there's already so few people controlling everything you see in here.
Perfect. Answer that phone. We love you. See you, my friend.
Thank you so much.
That was so perfect. Oh my God, we're getting lots of love in this chat.
Yeah, the chat is ripping. I just want to say thank you. I'm reading all of it. I love a lot of you. The comments are just so profoundly nice. And I know you have a crazy lineup remaining here, Andrea, so take them
home. We do. We love you, Gary. Thanks for joining us.